Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Frenchie is here. Joining us from Only Endurance is our new friend, Tim. Tim, first off, how are you?
Yeah, doing good, thank you. Yeah, it's, I can't believe it's 2023 already. I don't know if it's just a sign of getting old, but I still feel like it's 2012. So I'm a bit confused as to why I'm having to write 2023. But yeah, doing really good. I'm really excited to be on the podcast to begin with as well. It's great to be joining you guys. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, looking forward to an exciting season of motorsport ahead.
Frenchie, how are you?
Doing well. They're currently drilling on the front steps outside my house, so hopefully that doesn't come through in the podcast. I thought they would take the day off today, but apparently not. So we're just going to roll with it.
Awesome. Well, you know, that happens. I'm sure at some point the dog will be making noise in the background here because he's been like a maniac today. But anyway, we're going to talk some WEC today. We'll switch it up slightly since Frenchie and I are doing a lot of IMSA stuff this year. Figured kind of like let's dive all in on it. And I have to admit, I don't really know all that much about it. I haven't watched too much over the years other than, you know, like the big Le Mans every year. But I don't know where it starts. So Tim, you're more of the expert than either of us.
Sure.
So what makes WEC so special year after year?
I think the big thing for me is that as with endurance racing and sports cars around the world, the entry lists are just getting more and more impressive as time goes on. Obviously the attraction for the World Endurance Championship is that it is an FIA championship. You know, it's amongst Formula One, WRC, Formula E. Is considered, you know, the pinnacle. Okay, up for debate as to which, you know, which championship is the pinnacle. Happy to have that chat, and you know, it can go either way. Yeah. But the WEC is just an incredible championship. Entry lists are amazing. Races are proper endurance races. There's always that feeling of needing to slog it out and get to the end in every single round, and it's just where all the good stories and all the good parts of endurance and sports car racing come together. It has, I think, a reputation for maybe not being as exciting in the last few years, but coming into 2023, as we all know, new era of cars, etc., really just starting to build up, and it's almost feels like a rebirth of the series this year.
I guess let me just ask for our listeners of when did you first get into endurance racing and particularly WEC or WEC?
Yeah, so I, like most motorsport fans, got into racing through Formula One, through a, you know, a family member that watches F1, and that's how I started getting into it. And then I remember playing Gran Turismo 4 on my PlayStation 2, and I had, I just started going after all the sports cars there. You know, there was some, there was like the Mercedes CLKs in there and some proper old school kind of GT1. I think there's the Lister Storm as well, which I remember loving. And I just started to get interested in the sports car side of things through there. A friend and I, I remember after school we went and watched, I stayed around his house and we watched Le Mans in 2011. So that was the first time I watched Le Mans. I was probably 13 or 14. And then, yeah, since then I've got progressively more and more into it, and it's kind of in my rankings, it's overtaken Formula One and been the series that I'm most interested in. And then, yes, I'd say since probably 2014, 15, when LMP1 hybrid really kicked off and Porsche, Audi and Toyota were slogging it out in the top class there, that's when I really kind of committed and fell in love properly hard with Le Mans and endurance racing, definitely.
So on that note, you run, let's say, only endurance. How did that start, and you know, what else other than WC is on there, and tell us about that adventure.
Yeah, sure. So I was at university, and like probably a lot of people who are at uni don't really know what they're going to go on to do next. Just kind of trying to find your way in the world. Suddenly you're given a lot of adult responsibilities and you're not really sure what to do. So I started trying to work out where I could see myself and what it was I, A, was passionate about, but B, that I could maybe start a career in and make, you know, make my own in the future. I set up the page under a different name and was just running it, kind of posting cool images and covering all different kinds of racing on there. Then towards end of 2019, early 2020, I changed the name to The Racing Blog, and that's when things really kicked off. I focused basically on endurance racing, but predominantly WEC and IMSA. Those, you know, kind of putting those championships forward as the top of sports car racing, and basically covering the stories, the news, the rumors, the driver transfers, new teams, new cars, cool moments, kind of general appreciation for those kind of two series. Then towards the end of last year, I thought, you know what, time for a bit of a rebrand, start of something new. Like, as has been mentioned a million times, probably need a buzzer for people saying new era of sports cars. You need a jingle to play every time someone says that. But I thought, you know, why not? Let's go for a new look this time and start something fresh. And so, predominantly an Instagram and Twitter platform. Like I say, covering WEC and IMSA, but I'm expanding this year to the European Le Mans Series as well, and the GT World Challenge Endurance, which is obviously the big kind of GT3 series. And some of the blue ribbon events like the Spa 24 Hours, the Nürburgring 24. Hopefully becoming a bit of a go-to place for people on social media when looking for endurance racing.
So thinking about, like you said, this new generation or new era, right, that's kind of harking back to that, I don't know, I guess everyone, or for me, I'm a big classic motorsports fan, so I always go and down the rabbit hole of watching, you know, old GTP cars and, you know, just seeing the what I think is the heyday of like the 80s when the turbos were out of control. Do you think we're going to see basically the closest racing that we've had since that? Or maybe would you compare this era to maybe just a step on from the LMP1 that we've seen?
Yeah.
The heyday in the mid-2000s.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting comparison, you know, because people have been heralding this as like the new golden era. I think that they're different in their own way, and we'll always look back at them as being quite unique and having their own trip hazards and problems, but also, you know, their own kind of beauties and individualities. I think the current is, it is easy to just say like this is the new Group C, or, you know, this is the new GTP. I think it's quite easy to just lump that burden on it. I think the best approach is to just take it as it is. You know, it's a whole new formula of car. DPI 2.0 is how it's been referred to. You know, it's a development of that, if talking about LMDH GTP, but, you know, it's its own new chapter. And I think we've got to give it the respect and allow it to write its own story, really. Obviously, the names that are joining, the cars we know are just really cool. And to go from, or I would say has been a difficult period, you know, since Audi and Porsche left LMP1 in WEC, you know, the Toyota years, if you want to call them, you know, 18, 19, 20, and then, into 21 and 22. It's kind of, I feel like WEC fans, we've all been looking forward to this. And so I wouldn't say it was a continuation of LMP1, because I really think that was you know, again, that was a chapter that's kind of closed now and gone on, and we're all kind of eager to kick off something new.
So on that note, there's obviously a bunch of new teams and whatnot, especially in the hypercar class this year. So for those who are going, okay, well, who are the new teams or new cars? What's out there this year?
Yeah, so if you watch IMSA or you've watched WEC, or in fact you're a new fan completely, there's a whole new regulation of cars, those being the LMDHs and the Le Mans hypercars. And they come together to race in the hypercar class in WEC. They're two answers to the same question, if you like. The new cars that are joining this year are obviously the Cadillac, the VLMDH that we'll see in IMSA, Porsche's 963 LMDH, which will be in the hands of both the factory team and two customers as well. So yeah. Jota Sport and Proton Competition might be two names you've heard from. Jota have run LMP2 cars and Proton have run GTE AM, but also they've run GT3s in America. So I think that's it in terms of LMDH cars, but then we've got the new Ferrari coming online, the 499P. So that's Ferrari's first factory top class effort in your world level sports car championships for 50 years. So, you know, it's a real big, you know, new chapter. It's a real big point for Ferrari to bring a factory car to, you know, the world sports car championship of our era, if you like. So that's a massive storyline, you know, Ferrari, big name like that, committing quite a bit of budget and a new car to a championship. But the cars that are already racing, we've got the Toyota GR010, which is a hypercar that has been around since 2021. And that's more or less been the car to beat. It's been with Toyota, but it hasn't had everything its own way. You know, it's had its own teething problems. So Toyota may seem from the outside like this unbeatable force in WEC, but actually now with this car, which hasn't had everything go its own way, you know, I think there is a chance that you'll see that that's not quite the case anymore, that Toyota don't just win everything. Peugeot's 9X8, that's the bonkers hypercar that, you know, doesn't have a rear wing, that you know, that's all over socials all the time, because
I love it. Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? And I think that's what's really cool about this whole new category, is there are these different solutions, if you like, to the problem. Glickenhaus, obviously, the American guys, they're back again in 2023. So it's going to be cool to see that car, the SEG 007. Great sound and great looking car. And of course, the last one to add in is the Floyd Vanwall Vandevelde. You might have seen all the confusion about Vanwall's branding rights, copyright issues, etc., etc. But they have got the tick, the green light to go ahead for 2023. So we'll be seeing that car racing. So look, how many, you know, manufacturers have I just named? How many kind of, you know, new cars have just been named? This was just super exciting for fans and for newbies as well. You know, if you're new to the sport, what a time to be getting excited about it and tuning in.
So I guess just thinking about, we always hear this discussion of F1 being so expensive, right? And thinking about the technology being the, I guess, the driver of F1, so to speak, or, you know, of development in F1. I don't know if this is really publicly out there or not, but what is the budget comparison for a WEC program? Because I assume it's not necessarily cheap, but obviously we're going to see really close racing and, you know, the height of technology for probably, I would assume, less than F1, one would think.
Yeah, I think it's a tricky one to put a number on exactly. I wouldn't be able to do that, but yeah, it's nowhere near the cost of F1. And part of the reason I think we've seen the real interest is because of that, you know, because it's not going to take a massive dent into your annual budget to be able to produce a race car and run it. You know, these are big manufacturers that we're seeing, but the fact that we're seeing these privateer teams, if you like, you know, like Glickenhaus, like Vanwall, able to build a car themselves. You know, okay, yeah, there's help potentially, or I know Glickenhaus had help from Joost Racing, which people would know from like Audi days, and also from you know, just that they're such a big name. But the fact that they're able to build cars and race them in a world championship proves that money isn't everything in this sport. It obviously goes a long way, and obviously money is a massive part of it, as it is part of every motorsport. But the other thing as well, particularly in the top class, is that it's a balance of performance category. So it works the same way that GT3 racing does, you know, hence why you see a V10 Audi and, you know, a V8 Aston Martin, a Mercedes or whatever, you know, different formats of cars still able to compete level, you know, different, completely different, you know, styles or philosophies can still race together on track. The top class in WEC now is also going to be BOP'd. So, you know, you get that. There's not the need to spend the money for performance. So in Formula One, it's, you know, spend, 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 because we need to be developing parts, keeping on top of the game, whatever. With the hypercars, whatever you do, you're going to get balanced against the other guys. So there's not that need to spend the money. And also there's, you know, regulations, aerodynamic regulations, etc., that mean you don't need to spend all that money. And one big thing, last point, is that these new cars, if we're talking about the hypercar class, they are locked in via homologation. So when the cars are made, they have to submit, this is the car, this is the blueprints, if you like, and that's locked in for 5 years, I believe. So you don't need to spend that money on building a new car every year, keeping on top of development race, whatever. You know, you've got your car, and you're not necessarily stuck with it, but that's your ride for 5 years, basically.
So, thank you.
That's right. Long answer. I said a lot there. Sorry.
No, that's okay. That makes long answers make me happy. It's a lot less editing for me to do afterwards. But, you know, kind of on that note, and we've comparing a little bit, kind of IMSA and WEC, but other than the hypercar, is there any changes to the other classes this year?
Yeah, so the other categories this year are LMP2 and GTE AM. So there's only one GT class this year. The GTE Pro category is going away.
Sports stars. They're like superheroes.
But they're actually real.
Which is why we've made a podcast about them. You see,
they've all got a story.
But too many of these stories were cut short.
Kobe Bryant.
Payne Stewart.
Flo Jo.
Phil Hughes.
Justin Fashanu.
We're writing episodes about all of them.
And sadly, many more.
Death of a Sports Star. A new series from Crowd Network.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!
That basically just reduced in numbers from its peak in 2018-19, when there was, you know, Aston Martin, Ford, BMW, Porsche, Ferrari. It just started to whittle away as those programs shut down. And after last year, where there were five cars all season, and with the dawn, you know, of Ferrari, say, or Porsche joining the hypercar class, it was deemed that it was time to put that to bed. So two categories, LMP2 and GTEM. What's interesting here, though, is that there's no regulation changes as such. There's no, you know, big changes to the cars, etc. But it's the last year for GTE machinery. So 2023 GTEM, that's the last time we'll see like the 911 RSR, the 488 Evo GTE, the Aston Martin Vantage GTE. This will be the last year before in 2024 we swap to a GT3 formula. So there aren't necessarily massive changes at the moment in those other categories, but changes on the horizon. And obviously that GTE Pro being dropped is something to be aware of. When you show up and think that where's that fourth class gone? But it's unfortunately we've lost it, but I think GTM will make up for it.
Awesome.
So I've been seeing some of the driver announcements, which have been pretty incredible, I think, for the just full-time WEC programs. Can you maybe highlight some of the cool ones? Like I saw Jacques Villeneuve's going to be driving for that Van Wall program. What did I see? Valentino Rossi is going to be testing a BMW LMDH car?
Yeah, so he's going to be testing a car. And nothing confirmed yet about if he'll ever drive one in a race, but I think he's definitely interested. With WRT running BMW's entry next year, 24, BMW being WEC. The driver announcements have been big, obviously. And because they're factory efforts, you know, there's a factory Porsche team, factory Ferrari team, you know, they're going to go with the big guns. And what's interesting as well is that a lot of these names are called up from GT Racing. So if you look through the entry list and you look at the Porsche team, for example, Michael Christensen, Frederick McAvecky, Kevin Estra, Lawrence Vantor, they've all made their name in GT cars. The Ferrari lineup, for example, is predominantly their GTE Pro, you know, talent that they've then called up to the big team. Antonio Fuoco, Miguel Molina, James Collado, Alessandro Pierguidi, you know, these are names that people will know from GT competition. Super interesting to see these guys getting the drive. The ones, like I say, that you ask, you know, what the ones to look out for, be interested in, I think those GT drivers, how they adapt. And that's something that we're seeing across IMSA as well, you know, in the GTP class, BMW, for example, you know, a lot of those drivers are GT guys. Going to be really interesting to see how they adapt, but also it's just across the board really exciting. You know, there's just such, it's star-studded, really. Like you say, Jacques Villeneuve driving the Van Wall car, it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on debuting in WEC. You know, this is his first time in the series. He has raced at Le Mans before, but first time in a little while. A big name to keep an eye on. I'm not sure how it will go for him, but we'll all be keeping tabs. Still a few spots as well up for grabs in the customer teams as well. But again, that's another interesting little part of this new category, is that it's not only factory teams. You know, you can buy a car from Porsche, you know, buy a car from, you know, in the future when we'll have BMW, say, or like, you know, you have with Acura with Wayne Taylor and Maya Shank, kind of semi-customer teams. You get opportunities for different lineups and different drivers in there. So at the moment, we're going to have two customer Porsche teams in WEC this year, joining probably at the Spa 6 hours, so the last race before Le Mans, those being Jota Sport and Proton Competition. And it'd be interesting to see who they, you know, decide to sign and put in there, because they might be factory guys left over that get, you know, sent their way to help them get up to speed with the car, or it could be completely left field picks that really bring, you know, something quite interesting. If I had to pick one driver to say that I'm going to have my eyes on, I'm really keen to see how Kevin Estra, who's, I'm a big fan of Kevin, think he's a great, great driver, but I've only known him racing in GT machinery. That's all he's ever done. Interested to see how a big talent like him gets on in a prototype, and the guy doing the lapping, not doing, you know, letting people through, or, you know, trying to judge the traffic from his mirrors, basically.
So this, I don't say off topic, but kind of changing from drivers and cars. The calendar this year, you know, starts in just about, I think, 2 months from tomorrow is round one at Sebring. But obviously, every track, I feel like, on the WEC championship calendar is kind of epic. So other than Le Mans, which is obviously, like, when we talk about the Indy 500, is, you know, everybody's favorite race. What is your kind of favorite race to watch outside of the obvious?
Great question. We've got a short list to pick from, unfortunately, which is something I hope that changes in the future. I absolutely love Sebring. Some of my earliest memories of watching endurance racing are watching, you know, American Le Mans series at Sebring, or, you know, the early days of the United Sports Car Championship at Sebring. I loved that race, the 12 hours, and so I really like seeing the WEC cars there. I think it's really interesting to watch that and compare times across the board, and I just think it's such a unique venue that we just don't have anymore. It kind of still baffles me that we're allowed to race, you know, like these modern cars there, and I love it, and it's just so cool to watch. So I'd say between Sebring and Spa. I think Spa is just a great circuit for racing. The weather obviously is always a factor there, and I think it just lends itself to endurance racing and sports cars as well. Plus, who's gonna say no to watching 38 cars go up Eau Rouge and Radeon, you know, nose to tail on lap one, and then all the sketchy moments that come with it in traffic through there. So yeah, Sebring and Spa, I'd say, are the two. You asked me to pick one. I just can't, because I just love them both.
I think any racing fan or media person or podcaster can never actually just pick one. So I don't blame you at all.
Yeah, it's difficult with a short list as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we've seen some issues with some of the IMSA entries in testing that are kind of getting worried about reliability going into Daytona. Have you guys seen any of the same issues over on the WEC side with testing? Is there a little bit of trepidation going into the season?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's also important to remember that LMDH or GTP is coming online in 2023, but Le Mans Hypercar, the LMH cars, have been racing since 21. So we've already had two seasons with, you know, some of these cars, predominantly the Toyota and the Glickenhaus. But Peugeot also joined in the second half of 2022. So we have seen the hypercars racing already. And yet they've had a bit of a bumpy start to this kind of new era. Peugeot definitely haven't got on top of a lot of their reliability concerns that have carried through the last three races of the WEC season last year. Their pace has improved, but there's just been issues that have seen them spend time in the pit lane. And as we know, the idea is you just keep pounding round, right? You don't want to spend that time in pit lane. That's something that's really hurt Peugeot. Toyota had to really hustle to win the first Le Mans of the hypercar era. So in 2021, they had a real issue with fuel pickup. That was shortening their stints from 11 laps down to like 6 or 7 at times, because they were having a proper issue with it. The drivers managing to work out a way to basically reset a sensor every time they were downshifting. So they were downshifting and spamming buttons on the wheel to basically trick the engine into thinking it was okay. You know, and that's Toyota, right? And that's the guys that everyone thinks are invincible and just go and stroll it every time and win easy. So yeah, there have been those issues, and it's going to be really interesting to see if the problems that we might see at Daytona in a couple weeks' time, whether those are fixed, you know, if Cadillac and Porsche are able to fix those by race one for WEC in Sebring, or whether they're still issues that are bubbling under the surface. So yeah, those, like you say, those reliability concerns we've been seeing actually play out for 2 years now. You know, we've been seeing these teething problems with new cars actually live at the racetrack. And maybe the only thing is that jeopardy with a smaller class, you know, there's been less cars, has allowed that to play out quite safely. Whereas now, you know, if you're Ferrari, you're Porsche, you're whoever, and you're leading a race, you know, you're leading against all these other big guns, and something goes wrong, you're not able to just say, oh, you know, the car's new, we're still developing. It's going to feel like you've lost a chance to beat probably the, you know, the most prolific sports car competition in years, in decades almost. So yeah, those concerns we've seen, they've been happening, but I think now, yeah, that extra bit of jeopardy is going to be there this year.
All right, let's see here. I lost my question list because my computer is going haywire right now. So if you are going to have a crystal ball here and you're going to look at the season at the end of the year, and you're going to pick, let's just stick with the top class because that's obviously the one people pay the most attention to. Who is the championship winning car at the end of the year, or team, whatever is easier to answer without actually having seen any action yet this year?
The thing is this is going to be me going on public record saying this. So if I get it wrong, people are going to go, this guy knows nothing. I can't believe you.
Don't worry. We make predictions every year.
Okay.
And last year I actually wasn't too bad.
Right.
But for the previous 4 or 5 years before that, I was notoriously awful. So,
really? Okay.
And people still listen. So it's okay if your predictions are incorrect.
So if I say something, if I make a prediction now and Mike, you nod with it, I'm probably going to get it wrong. But if I say it and Frenchie nods along, then the chances are I'm going to be better. I'm going to be more on the money, right? Or
I don't like your thinking, but you're probably 100% accurate.
That implies that.
So yes,
that implies that Frenchie gets it right anyway. So
yes,
I think that if I'm going to go neck on the line, the championship winning car is going to be the number 6 Porsche Penske Motorsport 963. Kevin Estre, Andre Lotterer, and Lawrence Vanthoor. I mean, it's hard to say that it's talent in there, but that's pretty much the strongest line up in an exceptionally strong field. I don't think Porsche are going to win every race. I think they might win one or two. But I think if I had to put my neck on the line and say that's the car that I think will be the champion come the end of the season, I think it will be them. Other classes, it gets tricky because, you know, P2 as well, like the same machinery, level of competition is so high there as well. We're seeing drivers move on to, you know, other championships, etc. And again, GTM, so close. It's quite difficult to call. But you know what, for bonuses, I'll give you my predictions in those as well. I think I think that one of the United Autosports cars is going to win in LMP2. I would probably go with the 22 car, Felipe Albuquerque, Ben Hanley and Philip Hansen, I think is going to be the three drivers there. And in GTM, I'm going to go with Corvette, because I want to see Ben Keating winning a Corvette. So
I dig it.
Going to go with those guys.
I guess just for some of the maybe newer listeners who are looking to get into WEC this season, or, you know, kind of start with this new rules package, basically, or, you know, that at least for our U.S. listeners, kind of a fresh start. What's the best way to watch WEC races? I know they have a streaming package, but in the U.S., maybe that's not the best question to ask you if you're not in the U.S., but that's the best package to watch, is just kind of buy their subscription?
It is. I believe in the U.S. it's also shown on Motor Trend. I don't know how accessible that is for people. That's probably another paid service. But I think that, I think if you're going to commit and you're going to, you know, you want to invest, then I mean, it's really well priced. I get a lot of questions from people who say, how do I watch it? I don't want to buy the stream. You know, I don't want to pay for the WEC, you know, the app access, etc. I would say to that, I mean, for me in the UK, for a whole year, it cost me the price of 2 train tickets to work, you know. So, you know, my daily commute, it cost me 2 days of commuting to get however many hours of racing. I think people think it's like a subscription, like you pay £15 a month or $15 a month or whatever every month. It's not that at all. You buy all the races in one package. It's one payment.
It's not too bad.
So yeah, I think I do understand, you know, everyone's in a different position to pay, etc. But I do think it's really well priced for what it is. And it's not like Formula One or other, you know, motorsport series that can be quite quite expensive and quite costly to follow. In the UK, Formula One is behind a paywall. You know, if you want to watch it, you've got to have Sky, and or you watch highlights later on free TV, but everyone wants to watch it live, right? So in comparison, it's far more accessible. Appreciate the concerns about it. But yeah, that is just ultimately the best way to watch it, as opposed to finding some dodgy stream on Twitch that lets you down 5 minutes in.
Yeah, and the Motor Trend subscription I had for a short time last year, I think, to watch Le Mans, and it wasn't that expensive. I think it was like $4 a month or something.
Okay.
So it's not bad. It's easy. If I can remember, I'll post the link on our Twitter this week or when the season starts. But I'll wrap it up with one more question. I don't know if Frenchie has anything else, but you know, for those who, you know, are interested in learning more after listening, you know, where can they find your work? You know, website, Twitter, whatever else, you know, whatever else you want to plug, I'll leave it up to you.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I think best place to get me is on Instagram. So that's at Only Endurance. And on Twitter as well with the same tag. I'm posting there every day, trying to keep up with the news, etc. Post at least just general appreciation for the sport as well, you know, cool car images or reels or whatever it is. Likewise, I'm always there answering comments, answering DMs. I think another thing is that people can feel like motorsport is quite gatekeepy, like there's quite a gatekeeper's kind of mantra about sport, and unfortunately that's something that seems to have evolved in Formula One on social media. Not everyone, but you know, it's a massive issue. But yeah, that is definitely a whole nother podcast for you guys to deal with, so I'm gonna shove that issue over to you, and
we might have to have you back on and talk about that again. We talk about that pretty regularly,
right? Okay. I think with endurance racing, there's a whole different mentality to it. You know, like the Formula One is the NFL or the Premier League of motorsports, right? And it's definitely the easiest to just get on board with. With endurance racing, it's a bit more, there's a lot of jargon, a lot of terms, and a lot to understand. And you're often there because actually you just really like racing and you want to watch racing, and it's almost, you know, drama free in comparison. People, there's such a sense of community. People always want to answer questions, help you out, point you in the right direction. And I like to think as well that on my page, there's a real bunch of committed people that are happy to, it's only me running it, but the people that are there, part of the community, will often reply to comments themselves and help people out. So if you're new and you really don't know what you're getting yourself into and you just want a hand to get up to speed, you want to start following along, then yeah, drop me a follow, drop me a DM. Any questions, any time of day or night, if I'm up in the night to get a glass of water, I'll probably reply to them anyway. So feel free. But don't hit me up with the 3 a.m. what you doing message, all right, on Instagram. That doesn't get me, okay? That won't work.
That's going to wait till the morning?
Yeah. But if someone comes in going, oh, Tim, can you explain the... who's got which chassis supply for LMDH at 3 a.m. I'm like, yes, you get 10 minutes of my time.
I dig it. Frenchie, any last questions?
No, I just want to thank you for coming on, Tim. I really appreciate this. We'll have to have you back on maybe in advance of Sebring 1000, or, you know, just talk about Daytona or something like that in the near future.
Be great to chat. Yeah, thank you very much, guys, for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thank you very much. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your day.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.